Commission budget policy, discussion, public hearing, and decision. And this doesn't say who the lead is on that, so who's? Okay. Take her over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you have in front of you is...
Well, that's just... As I understand it, several of the commissioners asked to work with staff to look at the budget policy that was put in place several years ago and attempt to update that and make it relevant to today's situation and the wild future effort, et cetera. So you have a draft. This is a draft policy. And I don't know, commissioners, Commissioner Wecker or Commissioner Carpenter, if you want to say more about that.
Itself, if you've all had an opportunity to read it, it is very similar to the budget policy we adopted in the last biennium when we were also facing a very difficult financial situation. We were interested in appealing to our stakeholders for support for fee increases. We were not successful during the last biennial sessions, but we're back again asking for even more money this time. So it just seemed to me that we should look again at considering a similar budget policy that makes some promises, lays out how we intend to spend the money, the priorities we intend to place on that money. So I thought this would be a good thing for the commission to consider in laying out our policy.
Just a few facts, too, for the public, but as well as to remind the commissioners. Over the last five biennia, from 2007 to present, our general fund in 2007 was about $110 million. Mm-hmm. That went to as low as about $59 million in 2009. And currently, the agency has it's increased from $59 to $73 million. So we went down, came up a little bit. Most of that new general fund was related to cost of living increases. There were some new initiatives the legislature wanted us to take on, provided some funding. But that's the general fund situation. Our wildlife unrestricted, remember the wildlife account that's supported by license fees, has an unrestricted component and a restricted component. The restricted component is there's about 19 sub-accounts related to personalized license plates and various types of permits for hunting and fishing. That currently sits at about $116 million for the biennium. The Wild Futures package that went into the legislature included a total of about $37 million in new revenues. That $37 million is made up of a little over $1 million related to a new hydraulic project approval fee, about $5.3 million related to commercial fees that currently go into the general fund, and we're asking for those to be moved to the wildlife account. Nearly $8 million in general fund state and $22.6 million in hunting and fishing license fees. So, again, the Wild Future request that's before the governor right now is for a total of about $37 million. Just a little background.
That's helpful because it's a considerable amount of money, and we do understand that we're asking a lot this time. So this is in the spirit of defining for the stakeholders who we are asking that money of This is in the spirit of explaining what our intentions are.
I was involved in this a couple of years ago, and I think the language that is perhaps is appropriate for our short, long-term goals, and I support it.
I was just informed, though, while it says decision, we don't have to vote on it.
Is that right, Bill?
It's your policy. It's not a matter of law. You can decide how.
Well, I'm still not.
Mr. Chair, I believe the intent was to have this draft before the entire commission and the public, so the public could then have a chance to give us some feedback on it, and a decision would occur next meeting.
Oh, okay. Okay, because
that decision.
You can see why the wording threw us off here, because there was no language for the decision, too. So, okay, that's fine. Commissioner Keough.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Wecker, for clarification. This document was before the commission. We discussed it at the October 7 telephone conference. I could not participate in that conference, but I did communicate with the chair and expressed my objections to the document. And I believe that those objections were read verbatim on into the record, and so for the benefit of the people here today, I'm going to state my position. And I oppose the document. Notwithstanding your explanation, I was not involved. I did make some objections. This document was not revised, as far as I can tell, from October 7 when it was first before the commission. I failed to see the purpose of this document. Expression to the stakeholders. As far as I know, the commission has approved in September, I think it was, we approved the department's budget proposal to the governor, which included fee increases. That budget proposal now is squarely in the hands of the governor's office, and the governor's office will do what it wants with it. It will adopt it and move it as part of the budget and submit it to the legislature, or it will modify it. It's out of our hands. We've given our blessing to what the department already came up with in terms of fee increase and other budget expenditures. So I fail to see the purpose of it. The barn or the this has already left the barn. I don't see what we have to do. Also, there's some things in the document that are, I don't think, tell the full story. The document asserts that commercial fisheries cost more than the department receives in license fees. However, the document fails to mention that that commercial license fees go to the general fund. They don't go to the department, and that is a vestige of the separation or the pre-merger. Thank you of the two agencies. And the other thing that the document does not indicate is that excise taxes paid on commercial landed fish also goes to the general fund. And I know the commercial industry for the last 20 years has tried to introduce legislation which would direct that excise tax directly to the department, and it has not prevailed. And I know that the department's budget package this year, again, tries to direct the excise tax on these fish to the department to help pay for commercial activities. So the document fails to state that, and that's I think that needs to be recognized. And also this document directs the department to undertake some sort of cost benefit analysis of recreational versus commercial fishing. First of all, the department lacks the expertise to undertake such a meaningful economic analysis. The department does not have the resources to hire an economist to do such an exercise. And then thirdly, there is nothing in RCW Title 77 or anything else under the Washington law which says the department shall allocate resources based on economic return to the state. Those are my objections to the document. They stand, and just wanted to let the rest of the commission know and members of the public that are here today.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yes.
Well, I too oppose this document and question the process that brings it before us, because we talked about it and then it suddenly appeared. I'm not going to reiterate what Commissioner Kehoe said, but those reflect my objections. I do want to comment on this final portion about equitable share being paid by commercial and recreational fishers. Commissioner Kehoe covered the processes. It specifically speaks to support for hatcheries. Running hatcheries is one of the huge expenses of this department, and they benefit all of our angler and fisher stakeholders. And I think that the current support for those comes from this community in total, but also there are needs for other resources to support the hatcheries as well, because it is such an expensive endeavor. So, again, I oppose this policy.
Commissioner Grable, did you have? Did you? No. Did I see another hand?
I don't really recall in great detail whether we even discussed the process by which we would consider this document. It is a policy, so it's very different from regulations where staff bring us, and we are part of a defined process. The commission adopted something similar to this a couple of years ago. So I think I was one of the ones who offered it as a thought for paving the way, opening the way, making it more likely that we will get the consent of our stakeholders for these very sizable fee increases, very similar to what we had tried to accomplish last biennium. But there was, as I recall, no explicit definition for how we would consider. And I never saw myself as taking responsibility for making changes once it was put on the table. I was never given that role. So I guess that's the first thing we would need to decide is how are we going to recraft this, revise this, to try to find consensus. We have done that with other policies in the past, but it's up to the commission, certainly not me, to determine whether this document gets revised.
I mean, I have a thought on this, that we will have some public input pertinent to this document, and then I would suggest a conference call that that for this document to be the subject of, so we're prepared when we do meet in January, which will be a full agenda 2 days, to see if we bring it forward, if we don't, but we can resolve that in a conference call with the input from today as well.
Okay.
Acceptable?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like a little bobbleheads, you know. It's better this way than this way, though. Okay. With that, then, we will go to the public input, and most of you all know how to do this again. Always remind, but 3 minutes, beeper goes off, and wind up your thoughts, please. So, David Cicilano and Tim Hamilton, please. And sorry, David, about changing your nationality. Could you say it so I could hear it?
Siciliano. Good morning. Thank you to the commission. I'm here representing the Western Washington chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. And on the proposal to increase licensing fees, as a whole, we generally support it. We recognize the fact that the department is largely funded by our fees, and we feel that the licensing cost should reflect the value of our rich diversity of fish and game and non-game alike. And so we feel that we should fairly contribute to their management. And we also feel that we understand why people would feel resistance to it when fishing and hunting opportunities are being closed. Access is getting harder and harder. And I think that the state must responsibly and efficiently manage these resources and also understand where the resistance might be coming from. We haven't sent an official policy yet, but in general, we are in support of the commission, and we look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, David, and thank you to your organization for participating in the Wildlife Leaders Forum, I believe, a couple weeks ago. There was great input there. Any questions? Ross Barkhurst and Tim, you again?
Thank you again, Tim Hamilton. I think I'm going to introduce myself this time with a different title. I think I'm the unofficial shadow that doesn't make the board. But anyway, Thursday I spent 2 hours in 259 above, I believe it is, 259 or 239 conference room, telecommunication capability, all types of transparency to sit down and discuss a fee increase for the Department of Agriculture, Waste and Measures. All different types of registrations, all different types of fees, large increase, 60%, and everybody was participating. And this has gone on with me in my career for 30 years. The first question is, what's the money going for? And is the people who are getting the service paying fair rate and not subsidizing somebody else? What you saw this morning is user fees are a very difficult funding mechanism because you first have from Alaska South all the way down to the coast. You have a diminished rate in commercial fishing versus recreational. You have a tribal treaty obligation where there's no revenue again. So now you're down to where you got this 5% of the service going out, and we're on our way to trying to fund it off those 5%. And when you do that, you create what's called a death spiral. You're going to, if you're totally relying on recreational fishery, you got a problem. I get nervous about that if I was a commercial interest. And this budget and this proposal is headed towards a crush. I know that general revenue is a bad word in Olympia today, and it's tough to get the money. But if the citizens of the state of Washington have a duty and obligation to feed fisheries from Alaska South, then that should come out of the general revenue fund. It shouldn't be applied to someone who buys a license for an opportunity here. And it's fundamentally unsound. And I know the department's trying to get some money somewhere, but you start down this yellow brick road, and it's not economically sound. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody's got any.
Thank you, Tim. Questions? No. Thank you. Heath? And Ross?
Ross Barker, South Bend, Washington. I submitted to you a few weeks ago a list of suggested leading indicators. And what I can hear and see of this budget, it doesn't really deal with any of this. I gave you a little of my background. I started out in the second largest power plant of its kind in the world as a system engineer, generating leading indicators and keeping track of systems. Worked my way all the way up to a company CEO owning and operating a large power plant. Could not have gotten something like this approved at any time in my career. I have to agree with the commissioners who object to it for some of the same and some of the different reasons. I'll go through a few leading indicators. One is eelgrass maps, and that's an easy one. We haven't had one for 10 years in Willapa Bay, and everybody tells me that's the responsibility of another department. Great, it won't cost us anything. I go to WCMAC meetings with the Coastal Caucus is there and WDFW is there. Never heard them ask for that. Waterfowl use days, Life Washington Waterfowl Association. Since we started chemical control of eelgrass, I've seen the numbers go from 100,000 to 70,000 before in the last 3 years, 22,000, 14,000 birds in Willapa Bay, and this year I've never seen anything like it in my life. It makes 14,000 birds look like a lot of birds. Worst season I've ever seen. Chumman Coastal Fall Chinook Natural Origin Spawner Smolt Habitat Utilization. We should look at that. Two big ones, deferred priority maintenance and maintenance backlog. Okay, I've seen this for my whole life. This department's facilities are on a level of maintenance that lies below breakdown maintenance. When you do sufficient preventive maintenance, you don't have breakdown maintenance, except sometimes it happens. We're at a point now where we have breakdown maintenance and we don't fix it because we say we don't have the money. And then we get a much bigger breakdown, a catastrophe, like the weir at NEMA. Hatchery Science Review Group compliance. You received a 30,000-foot level briefing on how we're doing in the state. 88% looks pretty good. Willapa Bay, 33%. See nothing in the budget to address that. Our hatcheries are falling apart. PHAS and PNOB, these are measures of the quality of the fish that we put out, not just the quantity. These are leading indicators. Escapement goals are lagging indicators. Whoops, we didn't make it. I wonder why. So we need to be looking at some leading indicators here. And I would add an eighth one after yesterday's discussion about forage fish mapping. And by the way, I talked to those fellows last night after you left. And these guys are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I'm very encouraged about what they can do. The eighth one would be looking at level one, high-level non-conformances with your policies and procedures and how you're going to take care of them. And there are some. And at the last meeting, we talked about, it said detailed budget on the agenda. That's why I came. We said we'll send it in as a placeholder and we'll get the details later. Now it's later. I don't see the details, and it doesn't relate to anything I've done in my life to try to maintain a system or try to get ahead of the game with leading indicators. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Okay. And Robert Sudar, please. And Heath?
Chairman Smith, Director Unsworth, Commissioners, thanks for the opportunity. So I'm here in general support of the policy. There may be, you know, changes that, you know, language that may need to be made, certainly. I guess what I think is powerful about the policy, and I don't think it requires an army of economists to be on staff, is to look at how much does it cost to provide a particular fishery for the department to manage that, and how much revenue is the department receiving to help cover those expenses. And, you know, this is a government agency. It's not a business, but in some ways it's sort of a business because you are selling licenses, you are generating revenue to cover your costs. If we were in the old Department of Fisheries days and this was all general fund funded, then this wouldn't really be an issue. But what you do have, and I think Tim Hamilton mentioned it, you have a user group that is paying a lot of money to fund activities activities at the department, and they want to know, A, that their money is going to go towards services that benefit them as a user group, that they're not going to subsidize other user groups, and that to me is the power of the budget policy, particularly as it relates to disclosing that kind of information. Now, in fairness, since this was adopted 2 years ago, we haven't seen all that information come out, so I actually sent an email as it relates to the Columbia River asking that staff at least prepare that information. How much revenue is generated? And I'm not just talking about license revenue. I think it all ought to be considered. The revenue that goes to the Department of Revenue through excise taxes. So put it all together so then you can see it. I think the reality is you are asking for a 50 to 70% increase in license fees for recreational anglers, a lot of them who believe that the department's fish management policies don't always line up with who they're asking to pay the bills. Lastly, I'll just mention whether this policy, I think this policy is useful to sell that the department understands that its fish management policies should line up with its revenue to a certain extent. It's not the driving factor. I will tell you that last year you received a letter from Governor Inslee that specifically referenced this policy and encouraged the commission to use it and adopt it and hit many of these same points. So that's kind of I realize there may be some language, you mentioned it, to say we need to clarify that it's broader than just the revenue the department receives or whatever it might be. But I think it's a powerful policy for a lot of the people sitting in this room. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Heath. And Robert, you're the last one on this part.
Thank you, commissioners, for giving me the chance to comment. First off, I want to say that I agree with what Commissioner Kehoe said. And this concerns that Commissioner Thorburn had in regards to this policy. Since 1977, almost all of our commercial fisheries have been on limited entry. There have been several buybacks, so our numbers are decreasing on that basis. So are our allocations because of some of these things. So the income that we can provide through the funding channels that are available have declined. In talking about this several years ago with former Director Anderson, he pointed out that hunters pay their way, and fishermen don't, that the majority of the support comes from trout fishermen, who are the majority of the recreational fishermen. Way over half of the people are trout fishermen, not salmon or steelhead or any other species. The salmon, he also pointed out in 2012 when we discussed the Columbia River policy, he gave us all the documents in our working group that salmon on the Columbia especially, which support our Columbia River fisheries and coastal fisheries and Alaska and all of those, are almost entirely from Mitchell Act funding and utility monies, which everybody pays into, all citizens, whether they are recreational fishermen, whether they buy from a commercial fisherman or in a store. That those salmon aren't produced through budget dollars in the department directly. They come from outside funding sources. And he drove that point home, gave us all the paperwork. That's the reality of this. And to suggest otherwise, not the last line on your budget policy, is incorrect. That's just not what happens. I've heard comments about look at your website. Look at what there is there for commercial fishing. There's nothing on your website hardly about commercial fishing. There's a little bit about how to get a license, about some policies. But if I was a consumer and I wanted to know when I could buy or what species are harvested commercially, almost impossible to find that. When could I find out when they'd be in season? Can't, nothing like that on the website. Where could I go to buy directly from a fisherman? Nothing like that on the website. Your website, you certainly aren't spending any of our contribution on the website trying to sell our industry to the public, which the majority of the public has access to the resource through our industry. So I just want to say that the way this policy, just like the one 2 years ago, casts an uneven view of how this, how the agency is funded, who pays for salmon, which is typically the commercial argument, and what our actual contribution is. And I take offense to this kind of thing because it paints an unclear picture. I tried to get involved in the in kind of the comparing thing 2 years ago. You were having some conversations. Eventually, staff quit answering my emails. But I'm prepared to get involved again, because there needs to be consistent, data-driven looks at these that addresses all of the topics. This policy that you're proposing does not look at it that way, nor did the one 2 years ago. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert. That brings to an end to item number 17.